Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 8, Episode 15, The Rising Tide. After the death of Yoshimitsu, it was Yoshimochi's turn at last to govern as a full-fledged Seitai shogun. Although originally enthroned in 1394 at the age of 8, his father Yoshimitsu continued to govern until his death in 1408, when Yoshimochi was 22. The many accomplishments of Yoshimitsu were now in the hands of his son, who had every intention of making his own mark on history and felt in no way constrained to follow the same path as his father. Toward the end of Yoshimitsu's life, things became very strange between himself and Yoshimochi, and it is clear that they disagreed on a number of critical issues. Chief among them was the lucrative tribute trade with China, which Yoshimochi argued violated the sovereignty of Japan because of the implication that their nation was subordinate to the Ming Dynasty. In fact, he later claimed that just before Yoshimitsu died, the former shogun attributed his own illness to the fact that he had offended the gods of Japan by entertaining representatives from foreign lands. Although a Japanese mission would be sent to the Ming court in 1410 confirming Yoshimitsu's death and Yoshimochi's status as the new King of Japan, the next year Yoshimochi refused to receive a delegation from China, sending them back to the mainland empty-handed. Yoshimochi reversed so many of Yoshimitsu's policies that his contemporaries and future historians believed he was acting specifically out of spite for his father. Considering the fate of his brother Yoshitsugu, I think there is some merit to this theory. Ashikaga Yoshitsugu had removed himself from the political scene by taking monk's vows and living in a monastery. Shortly before his death, however, Yoshimitsu invited him to come back, and for a time they lived together at Rokuonji Temple. Yoshimitsu used his influence at court to ensure that Yoshitsugu was quickly promoted through the ranking system and given titles and offices. When Yoshimitsu died, Yoshitsugu had attained the junior third rank and was appointed as Sangi, or advisor to the emperor. Believing, with ample evidence, that his father intended to replace him as successor with his younger brother, but died before he could finalize the paperwork, Yoshimochi evicted Yoshitsugu from the Rokuonji temple complex and moved quickly to ensure his younger brother was isolated from potential allies. A year after Yoshimitsu's death, Yoshimochi's cousin, Ashikaga Mochiuji, had taken command of the Kanto Kubo position in Kamakura. His misadventures in the east would give Yoshimochi the opportunity he wanted to rid himself of his brother once and for all. Mochiuji was around 12 when he first inherited the office of Kanto Shogun, and he relied on his Kanto Kanrei, Uesugi Zenshu, to govern the east on his behalf in the early years. In 1415, however, the two fell out, and Uesugi Zenshu decided to raise a rebellion against the Kanto Kubo. It is worth mentioning that the Oda and Takeda clans sided with the Uesugi in this dispute. Those names will come up again in a big way next season. While Zenshu met with some early successes, including seizing Kamakura, the shogunate could not tolerate a samurai who raised a revolt against his own liege lord. They declared Uesugi Zenshu a traitor, and soon his support among the eastern clans dried up, and he was surrounded and committed seppuku. Ashikaga Yoshitsugu was accused of being involved somehow in this rebellion, and was executed on the pretense of treason in 1418. However, by that point, Yoshimochi's reign was already off to a rough start. In 1413, Emperor Go Komatsu retired. Under the agreement penned with the southern court, the next emperor should be from their line. Of course, there was already some trepidation about Go Komatsu Tenno's intentions when he had served as sitting emperor for 20 years after the southern court's capitulation instead of the agreed-upon 10. The cynical adherents of the southern court sovereigns found their fears confirmed when Emperor Go-Komatsu's son was enthroned instead of a member of the southern court branch. He is remembered as Emperor Shoko. This resulted in some disruption as former Emperor Go-Kameyama attempted to reignite the Nanbokucho War, but only managed some minor disruptions as the shogun's army easily outmatched the few partisans he had managed to recruit. When Uesugi Zenshu raised an eastern army to fight against the Kanto Kubo, it was feared initially that he was fighting on behalf of Go-Kameyama Tenno, and that the Nanbokucho War, which Yoshimitsu had ended, was about to resurge. Although Yoshimochi had officially severed ties with China, the Ming Dynasty was determined to reopen this avenue of trade, influence, and income. Emperor Yongle continually sent correspondence to the shogun, imploring him to accept Chinese tribute ships and to send tribute back in return. These letters grew increasingly insistent and even threatening as the Ming Emperor reminded the shogun of the terror of the Mongol invasions and commented that his army, unlike that of the Yuan, were skilled at fighting both on land and at sea. In 1419, panic swept through the capital when rumors floated in from Kyushu that Tsushima Island had been attacked by a fleet of 500 Mongol ships and that thousands more had been spotted heading toward Kyushu. This rumor was completely incorrect in almost every detail, except for the fact that Tsushima had been attacked. The ships that struck the small western island were Korean, however, and not a Mongol navy. We discussed the causes and results of this incursion 2 episodes back. Although they no longer traded officially with the Muromachi Bakufu, there is significant evidence that the more independent Shugo daimyo of Kyushu, like the Shimazu, traded secretly with the Ming Dynasty, crafting their own agreements regardless of what the government in Heian-kyo desired. Yoshimochi's reign probably sounds somewhat chaotic, and while it was certainly less stable than his predecessors, it seems like the fundamentals of the government built by Yoshimitsu were still quite sound. Exhausted from the stress of his office, Ashikaga Yoshimochi retired in 1423, naming his 15-year-old son Yoshikazu as his successor. Like his father before him, Yoshimochi continued to hold the reins of power as his son grew into the office, but the boy would never get a chance to pursue his own policies independent of his father. 2 years after he took office, Yoshikazu died, possibly from alcohol poisoning. Yoshimochi had also become a heavy drinker, and the loss of his only son certainly did little to alleviate the stress that drove him to drink. He continued governing the realm for another 3 years, but died at the age of 42 in 1428, without having named another successor. On the day Yoshimochi died, the Kyoto Kanrei Hatakayama Mitsuie went to the Iwashimizu Hachiman Shrine to seek divine intervention in this potential succession crisis. The late Yoshimitsu had 4 surviving sons, so he put all their names on lots and drew one at random. The chosen son of Yoshimitsu had taken Buddhist monk vows when he was 10, and at the moment of his ascension to the shogunal throne was 35 years old. He had, by this point, become the abbot of Enryakuji Temple on Mount Hiei, and I think it's reasonable to assume that he brought whatever lessons he had learned in that position to his new job. Ashikaga Yoshinori became the new Seitai Shogun in 1428 and ushered in a new era of Bakufu authority. Because of the manner in which the Bakufu had chosen him, he is known as the Lottery Shogun. Regardless of how he was chosen, Yoshinori went straight to cleaning house as he saw it. He revised the procedures for issuing debt forgiveness, warned some of the feuding temples to stop resorting to violence, and tended to choose coercion and high-handed authoritarianism rather than conciliatory rule. While this leadership method had its advantages, it also tended to alienate and embitter those who may have otherwise been willing to compromise. This leadership style was doubtless very useful during his time on Mount Hiei, but it was a drastic departure from the status quo of rough consensus which had been established since Yoshimitsu's reign. Shortly after Yoshinori's elevation, the southern court partisans who had tried to relaunch the Nanbokucho War surrendered and gave up the fight. It's possible that Yoshinori took this as a sign that his dictatorial methods were yielding positive results. His resolve would soon be tested, however, by the Kanto Kubo himself, Ashikaga Mochiuji. Mochiuji was the son of Mitsukane, but Yoshimochi had officially adopted the Kanto Kubo, which in Mochiuji's mind made him eligible to become the next shogun. He despised Ashikaga Yoshinori, calling him by the epithet Genzoku, which means defrocked monk. Yoshinori likewise disliked the growing authority of the Kanto Kubo, and for some time the peace between them was only kept through the clever interference of their intermediaries. While the rebellion of Uesugi Zenshu had been put down by Bakufu troops in 1417, the Kanto Kubo used the conflict as an excuse to wreak havoc on Kanto clans whom he felt had disrespected him. Mochiuji even went so far as to attack some Kanto clans like the Satake and Utsunomiya, who were allied directly with the Bakufu. The late Yoshimochi had sent his cousin-slash-adopted son repeated warnings against these provocations, but the Kanto shogun paid them no heed. In 1433, Hatakeyama Mitsuiye died. Mitsuiye had been a trusted advisor of both Yoshimochi and Yoshinori, and acted as a critical buffer between the shogun and the government of Kanto. In 1435, Uesugi Norizane, the Kanto Kanrei, began more regularly falling out with the Kanto Kubo, who grew suspicious of the Kanrei's obstruction. The rift between them grew increasingly broad until finally, in 1438, Norizane requested help from the Bakufu against Ashikaga Mochiuji on the grounds that there were credible rumors that the Kanto Kubo was raising an army to kill him. Yoshinori was outraged, but proceeded according to a surprisingly traditional path. He requested a rinji, or writ of imperial authority to destroy enemies of the throne, from the emperor, who granted it. This allowed the Bakufu troops to fly the imperial banners, automatically marking any army that resisted them as traitors to the Tenno himself. The Kanto samurai, emboldened by this maneuver, soon rallied against Mochiuji's army, and by the fall of 1438, they had all but routed the troops loyal to the Kanto Kubo. Mochiuji fled for Kamakura and quickly took vows as a Buddhist monk after renewing his fealty to the shogun Yoshinori. Uesugi Norizane was satisfied with this result and asked the Bakufu to spare Mochiuji's life and raise his son Yoshihisa to the position of Kanto Kubo. The shogunate denied this request, so, against his wishes, Norizane ordered his troops to surround Yoanji Temple, where Mochiuji was sheltering. Mochiuji committed seppuku there, and when he heard this news, his son Yoshihisa likewise committed ritual suicide at the temple where he was hiding in Kamakura. For the moment, there were no eligible candidates for the office of Kanto Kubo. Mochiuji had another son, but he was still an infant at the time, so it was decided that Uesugi Norizane should essentially govern as the Kanto Kanrei until the boy came of age. Norizane was tired of politics and bloodshed, however, so he retired and left the matter in the hands of his brother, Uesugi Kiyokata. The office of Kanto Kanrei thereafter would be transformed into the shogun's deputy in the Kanto, and not the Kanto Kubo's advisor. But taking a firmer hand in Kanto was far from Yoshinori's only meaningful political reform. He received a letter from the Emperor of China via the Ryukyu Islands and restored trade relations with the mainland, which led to future voyages which helped the economy as well as the Bakufu's coffers. After the surrender of the last Southern Court dead-enders, he arranged for the remaining members of the Southern Court line to take vows as monks and be shuffled off to obscurity so that they might no longer attract ambitious workers of mischief. The Shugo Daimyo did not seem to have any objections to this maneuver, though it does seem like something of an overstep for a shogun. However, they were less thrilled by Yoshinori's insistence that his position allowed him to dictate matters of inheritance in the clans of Shugo Daimyo, even going so far as to declare rightful successors on their behalf and to ensure the religious cloistering of the successors' siblings. What authority Yoshimitsu had gained through patient influence, persuasion, and manipulation, Yoshinori was trying to make permanent through fiat and naked coercion. The clans disliked his meddling, to say the least, and many grumbled that the shogun was going too far by bossing entire families around. Adding fuel to this fire, Yoshinori was extremely paranoid and began disinheriting various landholders of both Kuge and Samurai origin in punishment for offenses which were generally seen as trivial. What happened next was far from surprising. In 1440, a samurai in Kanto attempted to raise a rebellion around some of the children of the late Mochiyuji, but it was defeated the following year by other clans acting on behalf of the shogunate. On July 12, 1441, Ashikaga Yoshinori was invited to a feast at the Heian-kyo residence of Akamatsu Mitsusuke, ostensibly to celebrate the final pacification of Kanto. The Akamatsu clan was particularly unhappy with Yoshinori's meddling in the holdings and successions of the clans, and the shogun decided to attend this feast partly in hopes that he might rebuild trust with the Akamatsu clan and restore good relations. Akamatsu Mitsusuke hired sarugaku performers to entertain his guests, which included many high-ranking officers of the Bakufu, including members of the Hosokawa, Yamana, and Hatakeyama clans, as well as some kuge. During the performance, panels on the walls of the room slid open, and warriors spilled out of the storage spaces, fully armored and fully armed. Azumi Yukihide, a prominent member of the Akamatsu clan, is credited with killing Ashikaga Yoshinori by beheading him on the spot. Chaos ensued in the hall as some of the shogun's retainers fought back and were killed, while others ran for their lives. The shogun had brought only a modest bodyguard as a sign of trust, and those few warriors were killed in the ensuing melee. The assassination of Yoshinori was noteworthy not only for its brutality, but also for the sluggish response from the Bakufu. Hosokawa Mochiyuki, the Kyoto Kanrei at the time, had been present at the feast but had fled at the first sign of violence, scrambling over the outer wall to make his escape. He and other ranking Bakufu officials who survived that night locked themselves in their homes for fear that this murder was only the beginning of a larger plot which was still unfolding. The members of the Akamatsu clan who had performed the assassination prepared to commit ritual suicide, expecting that at any minute the Hokoshu would bear down upon them with hot vengeance. When an entire day and evening passed without any sign of said hot vengeance, Akamatsu Mitsusuke and his warriors made ready to depart for their home province of Harima in Chugoku, setting fire to their residence as they departed the city, with the shogun's head mounted upon a spear like a grim battle standard. The shogun was dead. But was it murder? Yes, obviously it was murder. The Bakufu needed to do something about this, and fast. The degree to which Yoshinori had absorbed responsibilities and authorities normally reserved for other officers of the shogunate became extremely obvious upon his death. He had sat upon the shogunal throne for 13 years, and now that he was suddenly gone, the Bakufu seemed to come to a screeching halt. The acting head of the shogunate was Hosokawa Mochiyuki, but he was still recovering from the shame of having fled while his shogun was assassinated, and the mockery which he received made him doubt himself in a time when the shogunate needed his leadership. After much deliberation, probably too much, Yoshinori's son Yoshikatsu was chosen as his successor, and the Hokoshu gradually assembled for a punitive expedition. The Bakufu's delays would prove costly, however, for Akamatsu Mitsusuke had not been idle. After tracking down a grandson of Ashikaga Tadafuyu, who was named Yoshitaka, he announced that he was supporting the young man's rightful candidacy for shogun and attempting to gather supporters in Chugoku to face off against the Hokoshu. Fortune, however, was not on Mitsusuke's side, and in spite of gaining the support of a few fellow disgruntled clans, his actions had angered the Hosokawa, Yamana, and Hatakeyama clans, and they fell upon him swiftly. The fighting lasted through the fall of 1441, but by October, Mitsusuke was holed up in Sakayama Castle in Harima, which had been besieged. On October 4th, Mitsusuke committed ritual suicide as the Bakufu allied forces breached Sakayama Castle's defenses and his rebellion had ended. The new shogun Yoshikatsu was only 7 years old, and thus it was up to the new Kyoto Kanrei Hosokawa Mochikuni to continue the actual governance of the Bakufu while the young shogun was still growing up. Sadly, we will never know whether Yoshikatsu could have steered the Muromachi Bakufu back onto a stable course and perhaps averted many future disasters for the shogunate. In 1443, just 2 years after the murder of his father, the young shogun took a bad fall from horseback and died. His younger brother, then known as Yoshinari, was made the new shogun in his stead. He was 8 years old. The reign of Yoshinari, who later adopted the name of Yoshimasa, would be one of the most tumultuous and chaotic of any Ashikaga shogun before or after. We will explore the details of his reign later, but for now it suits our purposes to briefly analyze the general political trends leading up to Yoshinori's assassination and discuss the fallout that came after. Yoshimitsu's reign united the realm, at least as much as it could be united after more than 50 years of intermittent civil war. In order to reduce the power of clans which had gained far too much land, income, and influence in the wake of the Nanbokucho War, he at first picked fights which he knew he could win, but eventually settled into more nuanced forms of establishing superiority. Ordering the Shugo Daimyo to reside in Heian-kyo ensured that he could keep a close watch on them, and likewise gave them every reason to strengthen the operations of the Bakufu, not wanting their lieutenants in the provinces to get any ideas about usurpation. But as much as historians generally praise Yoshimitsu, his system was far from perfect, and his mistreatment of his son Yoshimochi led the latter to undo much of his father's work, possibly from reactionary spite. While Yoshinori's reign is generally characterized as rigid and dictatorial, he was likewise reacting to the same problem as his grandfather Yoshimitsu. How could the shogunate maintain its supremacy if the samurai clans which supported it grew too powerful to be controlled? In many ways, it's a tale as old as time in Japanese history. The emperors of the Heian period, the Fujiwara regents, the Taira clan, and the Kamakura shogunate all wrestled with the question of maintaining a strong central government without creating a system which supported, intentional or otherwise, regional strongmen becoming influential and powerful enough to eventually challenge the central government itself. It is possible that, if he had not been so unceremoniously murdered, Ashikaga Yoshinori may have succeeded in reducing the power of Shugo Daimyo while enhancing the power of the Bakufu. Under his system, the successors were directly chosen by the shogun, which meant that they would owe their authority to that shogun and would therefore have reason to protect and defend the shogunate from any threats. However, it cannot be denied that the disapproval of such direct interference was what led to him being assassinated in the first place. The clans wanted the freedom to choose their own successors, something which had always been their prerogative, and which even Yoshimitsu had risked large-scale civil warfare when he dared to interfere with it. Although the Bakufu avenged the death of Yoshinori, there was little question as to whether they were interested in continuing his policies. The new shogun was just a child, as was his successor, and neither Hosokawa Mochiyuki nor Hatakeyama Mochikuni, the Kyoto Kanrei who came after, were eager to raise the issue of shogunal authority over clan successions, especially as neither had any interest in allowing the shogun to eventually dictate the succession of their own clans. Ashikaga Yoshimasa would not ascend the shogunal throne immediately upon his elder brother's passing in 1443, but would take office in 1449 when he turned 14. By the time he stepped into that office, there already existed a momentum among the Shugo daimyo which the young shogun would be hard-pressed to reverse. Although they condemned Ashikaga Yoshinori's brutal assassination, many of the regional magnates who supported the Bakufu also supported their own right to name their successors, control all the land within the provinces where they held titles, and even correct the shogun when he overreached his rightful authority. Next time, we will explore the early career of Ashikaga Yoshimasa as he deals with yet another unruly Kanto Kubo, tries to navigate a tricky political path, and ultimately oversees a massive civil conflict which would permanently hinder the authority of the Muromachi Bakufu. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.